Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great King, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
I'm Ben Kinslow.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
One of the leading causes of death globally today is cancer. And for anyone receiving that diagnosis, it can be a crushing blow to life and filled with immediate questions. While different cancers affecting the body react differently in regards to time and response to treatment, the very knowledge of having cancer can be devastating news for anyone.
Well, that's true, Earl. And for decades, researchers around the world have been studying cancer and working on cures for many types of the diseases occurring in the human body. Many Israeli researchers, however, are leading the way in both new treatments as well as new diagnostic technology for these life-altering diagnoses.
Cancer's effect generally begins by causing a person's own cells to mutate and create an attack on the body. In an effort to combat that process, one Israeli researcher is working on new ways to take this mutation and reprogram it back into its normal state. Kevin Howard recently spoke with Professor Varna Shusham Barmatz, who is working diligently on this new technique in cancer treatment. And we'll bring you that insightful interview in just a moment. But first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday welcomed Benjamin Netanyahu's re-election as prime minister as a good sign for peace. Everyone says you can't have peace in the Middle East with Israel and the Palestinians, Trump told reporters at the White House. I think we have now a better chance with Netanyahu having won. Netanyahu secured a clear path to re-election on Wednesday and a record fifth term in office, with religious right parties set to hand him a parliamentary majority, despite a close contest against his main centrist challenge, Benny Gantz. During the election campaign, Netanyahu highlighted his close relationship with Trump, who has implemented a series of policy changes on the Middle East that were seen as a boon to Netanyahu. Before we return to Earl and Ben, here's today's This Page in History.
On April 15, 1912, the unsinkable RMS Titanic sank. According to some, there were enough Jews on board that kosher meals were served. The Jewish passengers represented a cross-section of Jewish society. Two unusual women on board were Edith Louise Rosenbaum and Mrs. Henry B. Harris. Mrs. Rosenbaum was a writer for Women's Wear Daily. During World War I, she would become the first female war correspondent. Mrs. Harris went on to become a famous New York theatrical producer. Three of the most famous passengers were Benjamin Guggenheim and Isidore and Ida Strauss. Guggenheim was a ne'er-do-well from a famous New York family. His most famous accomplishment was to give the world his daughter Peggy Guggenheim, the famous patron of the arts. Isidore Strauss was part of a fabled New York family that had ownership interest in Macy's and Abraham and Strauss. He was mourned as one of New York's greatest philanthropists. The disaster caused widespread outrage over the lack of lifeboats, lax regulations, and the unequal treatment of the three passenger classes during the evacuation. Subsequent inquiries recommended sweeping changes to maritime regulations, which took effect in 1914.
Welcome back, everybody. A cancer diagnosis can be devastating news for anyone. And while many strides in treatment have come forward, one Israeli researcher is working on a remarkable new technique. Kevin Howard recently spoke with Professor Varna Shusham Barmatz to find out more.
Thank you so much, Earl. I am talking today with Professor Varna Shusham Barmatz. She's from Ben-Gurion University, and she is a professor there. Varna, thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you.
Professor, please share your initial interest in this type of research, and specifically in cancer research.
Since high school, I have been fascinated by science and specifically by biology. And this led me to choose to study biology for my bachelor degree and then continue my training as a biologist for master degree from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and then PhD degree in biochemistry from Weizmann Institute. And this was followed by postdoctoral studies at the University of Madison, Wisconsin, Madison, United States, and then a second postdoc in the University of Toronto in Canada. Now, although I have been offered an academic position at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem and in Weizmann Institute, I decided to join the Department of Life Sciences at Ben-Gurion University because it is a young university in the Negev and because I want to follow the aim of Ben David Ben-Gurion, our first president, a prime minister, to develop the Negev. So while in my PhD study, I focused on photosynthesis, trying to understand how light energy is converted into chemical energy and used by plants to produce sugar. And as a postdoctoral study, I addressed how nerve signals activate the muscle. When I began my own group at Ben-Gurion University, I decided to focus on metabolism and mitochondria. Now, mitochondria is the power station of the cell. And although it looks like there are different topics, all share bioenergetics, or in another word, biological energy. So my background in bioenergetics and my training in several biological disciplines lead me to read all studies from the 1950s by Otto Warburg, who claimed that cancer is associated with mitochondrial dysfunction. And it turned out that all cancers, regardless of their type, have this metabolism reprogrammed as a common property. Therefore, I decided that the best way to target cancer by finding the way to rewire their metabolism. So we can destroy their metabolism or convert it to the one is seen in normal cells. So I figured out that this would lead to starvation of the cancer cell, which does enable them to grow or to proliferate. And both are high energy demanding processes. So I decided to select a target to make these changes. And I identified a mitochondrial protein called VDAC that serves as mitochondrial gatekeeper. In other words, deciding what will go in and what will exit the mitochondria. Remember, the mitochondria is the energy factor of the cell. So this was in 2006. Since over the last 12 years, I have been working in several directions and developed several strategies to control the activity of this protein. So I could control the mitochondrial function and thereby cell survival. One of these strategies is to control VDAC so it can induce cell death. And this is very good because in this way we will overcome the resistance of cancer cells to chemotherapy and other cell death inducing. And another strategy is to attack VDAC pro-survival activity. It has both cell inducing activity and pro-survival activity. And this is what we did by depleting the cancer cells from producing this protein. And it's like closing the door of the mitochondria, and therefore they cannot function as cancer cells. The oncogenic properties to be like in normal cells.
Could you please describe your findings and strategy?
So one of our strategy was, let's destroy the gatekeeper. Let's destroy the function of this protein. So we developed a new molecule that prevents the production of VDAC in the cell. And we found that this is not only leads to inhibition of cancer cell growth, but also results in reprogramming of the cancer cell to be similar to a normal healthy cell. And this is important because we proved it in several models. For example, a brain cancer, which is called glioblastoma, in lung cancer, and breast cancer. So it means that we took three different models and we prevent the formation of this protein, and we found now that all these cancers change their properties. For example, we reduce the tumor by 90%. We stop the blood supply to the tumor. We reduce its ability to spread to the body as a part of the body. And most importantly, we cause disappearance of cells, cancer cells called cancer stem cells, which known to be very resistant to radiation and chemotherapy. And actually, they are the source for new cancer development. In other words, we discovered a new code for reprogramming cancer cells so that they lose their cancerous properties.
So are there advantages that you believe you have had by conducting your research in Israel that you might not have had in other nations?
Actually, science is shared. We have it everywhere in the world. We publish it. We can protect our finding by a patent. It's the ability to make it good and to advance it is really problematic with respect to funds. Here in Israel, we have the rich intellectual environment. We can do discuss, we can have creative ideas, but the funding is very low relative to other countries, particularly United States. So obviously, this limits the time it takes to reach our goals. And therefore, if I had the ability to get the money like people getting in the United States from NIH grant, I could do it much faster. Also, we have a problem of this budget we have that does not allow us to do very important experiments because they are very expensive. Yet, considering our situation and what happens in our neighbors in the Middle East, in Israel, we are doing very well. And you know, there is this book, it's called The Startup Nation, published in 2009, showing that Israel produces more startup companies than large and more peaceful and more stable nations like Japan, China, India, Korea, Canada, and the UK. So all this begins with excellent academic science that we have here in Israel.
As we pray for the nation of Israel and her people, let's also remember to be thankful that God remains true to his promise of blessing the world in many different ways through the tiny nation of Israel. But right now, we need to take a short break so that you can hear about a special outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a real difference in the lives of many people in Israel today.
The nature of the wars does not change, but the nature of the enemy does. These are the words of Yossi Baidatz, Major General, Israel's Defense Forces, regarding the nature of Israel's enemies who are bent on terror. Groups like Hamas and Hezbollah know that the defenders of Israel value life, and the terrorists look for ways to exploit this for their own gain. Due to the reckless behavior of terror organizations, the IDF exercises great caution in the use of deadly force to avoid harming civilians, even while increasing the danger to themselves. But this is the price you pay when you value human life. And this is the battle the IDF faces every day. Hi, I'm Jim McKenzie, Project Coordinator for CFI's Project David's Shield. I have witnessed firsthand how these selfless warriors commit to training and learning the skills required to protect their homeland, defending those who cannot defend themselves, while at the same time protecting innocent civilian lives. By choosing life, these soldiers win a victory on their own personal battlefield within. They choose light over darkness and life over death, blessings instead of curses. When we do this, we align ourselves with the God who created light and all that He says is good.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, David Shield. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and Professor Varda Shosham Barmatz as they talk about the latest advances in the field of cancer treatment.
Professor, what's the international reputation of the scientific academic community here in Israel, in your estimation?
The scientific community in Israel is very active, extremely creative, and it's reflected by the number of publications per man or per person relative in other countries in the world. It's reflected in these startup companies that we have that I mentioned before. It's reflected with the number of students that complete their PhD studies in Israel and went abroad for postdoctoral studies. It reflected in many other levels. We are appreciated. We have been invited to many conferences all over the world. We organize many international conferences. In spite of the situation in Israel, still people coming. Just last week, I had a visitor from Japan came specifically to study some of the techniques that we developed. We separate between the political situation and science. When we do science, it's science for all over the world. It's shared by all scientists. We published our work, and everyone is, you know, all the scientists are exposed to it.
Do you feel international investment in Israeli research is something you're open to, or is that even allowed?
Sure, of course it's allowed. We applied sometimes to NIH grants, which are, you know, we talk in our level of in Israel, if you get $60,000 per year, it sounds good grant. But in the United States, in NIH, you can get $1 million per year. So this is a different level of budgeting. But the chance to get an NIH grant is maybe 1% for a foreign scientist, not a U.S. scientist. Also for U.S. scientists, is very limited. So we are open. In fact, I got two donations that allow me to develop this science. One from a scientist from the United States, which has a company, and I don't want to mention his name. He developed one of the drugs used in the United States, and another one from Switzerland. Without these donations of together about $1 million, I couldn't reach the stage of doing such very expensive experiments and in so many cancer models, and also doing some studies that the academic never does because it's required outsourcing to do the studies in companies in maybe China or India, because they are asking about toxicity of your drug and other studies that is not in the hand of the academy. It has to be done outside, and it's with a lot of money. So, of course, we are open to support, especially now I'm establishing two companies for cancer, working on two different strategies. One, blocking the production of this protein-controlling cell line, and the other one is inducing apoptosis or cell death in cancer. So one stopping the energy and other one inducing cell death. And this company, we are now discussing the agreement, and they are in the stage of looking for investors.
So, Professor, is there anyone you might know personally that would benefit from the eventual access of having the treatments related to this research?
Yes, you know, I believe everyone of us know people with cancer. And after my findings were published in journals and magazines all over the world, I have been approached by so many cancer patients or their relatives. It was so sad to hear their story. And, you know, often it caused me not to sleep at night. And this is just give me more energy to work not 16 hours like I use, even 18 hours a day. And to try to find a way how we can make this treatment, where they are not specific to one cancer, as I said in my introduction. It can work on all type of cancer. It's not targeted to simple single mutations. It takes the core of the cancer, the energy, and stop it. So, of course, if we had the ability, mainly finance, I will be very happy to make this program as fast as possible and to get FDA approval and help the suffering people. As I said, sometimes I get phone calls and people trying to convince me, please give us your treatment. And I had to say, no, I cannot, because it's against the law. Until I will not get the FDA approval, I cannot do it. And really, it's so hard for me to say this word.
Professor, tell us some of the challenges you've encountered along the way of development for your treatment.
Well, first I will have to say that I have 19 patents, family patents, that cover all these findings. And as I said, I was lucky to be approached by two groups of investors to develop two companies working on cancer. As I mentioned, we are in the stage of signing the agreement with the hope that they will be able to secure the requested funds that will allow them to complete the program, which will be first in humans within 2 years, and then complete all what is needed to bring the treatment to cancer patients as soon as possible. The government, there is some programs, but we talk about, you know, 6 million shekel, let's say $1.5 million. This is not enough. And we decided that the new company will start the work only after they will secure the requested funds that will allow us to complete our program. Again, we are very optimistic. We believe that we can do it. We are trying now to see if we can approach other investors to get the 5-6 million, because now we have only 2 million. So we can start and go up to phase one and beginning of phase two easily. And that stage, I'm sure many large companies will come and take it over to clinical use.
Finally, Professor, do you have any general health advice for our listeners?
Just in general, while I'm not a medical doctor, but it is clear to me that good health is associated with treating our body well. It means exercise. Good sleep is very important to sleep. The body restores its functions well during our sleep. Healthy food, even being happy with what we have, and of course, helping others. When you help others, you get a satisfaction and your body feels it and responds to it.
Professor Varda Shoshan Barmatz of Ben-Gurion University, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Thank you. Thank you. Enjoyed talking with you.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for that interesting and encouraging interview concerning the latest advancements in the treatment of cancer being developed in Israel today. Well, our time's almost up for this week, and up next, we'll hear from David Nekretman with this week's Bible on the Go. But before that, let's take another visit to the CFIJ News Desk as David Milburn brings us the latest. David?
Thanks, Ben. Israel's president, Reuven Rivlin, announced that he would begin holding consultations with the heads of Israeli political parties on the formation of the next government at his residence in Jerusalem next week. The decision to initiate the process was made in coordination with the head of the Central Elections Committee only hours before the final results were expected to be announced, in what was a hard-fought election battle between incumbent Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and key challenger Benny Gantz of the newly formed Blue and White Party. In an unprecedented move and a historic first for the State of Israel, the meetings with the various faction heads that traditionally take place behind closed doors will be broadcast live across all media platforms in order to promote transparency vis-à-vis Israeli citizens. In Israel, within 7 days of the election, the president assigns the task to the lawmaker he feels is best positioned to form a viable coalition after receiving recommendations from the heads of the parliamentary factions. The president generally awards the party that receives the most votes the right to form a coalition government, which requires a majority of Knesset members. Now, before we return to Earl and Ben, here's David Nekrutman with this week's Bible on the Go.
There are people in my life that have impacted me who are still living, and the sages of the past. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel is one of those people who I've never met personally, but his words continue to inspire me even to today. He is famous for walking with Dr. Martin Luther King from Selma to Montgomery during the height of the civil rights movement. And while he was walking, he comments that his legs were praying. How can walking be prayer? It struck me. It was something that was like a wow moment, because I always thought of prayer as a list of requests I need to approach God about. And hey, this is what I need in my life, a nice car, house, health. But Rabbi Heschel taught me something very profound, that prayer is nothing about you. It's everything about God. But in order for that to really happen, you have to contract your ego and allow God to come in. This actually was very profound for me when I rediscovered Psalm 69:13, but I pray to you, Lord, in the time of your favor, in your great love, O God, answer me with your sure salvation. The beginning words, but I pray to you, in Hebrew is va'ani tefilati, literally translated, I am prayer. What does that mean, I am prayer? How do you become prayer? That has to happen at the moment where your ego, self-centeredness, is totally out of the picture, and you're in the state of God. This is David Nekrutman with Bible on the Go.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody. And thanks for joining us again this week. And please don't forget to support this incredible station, because it supports Israel.
And before we go, let me invite you to join us right here again next week as we bring you all the latest from Israel and the Middle East.
So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox, reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.